Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
It's the time of the week when we go up to Madrid and find out what's happening and what's making the news in El País. Delighted to be joining me from the newsroom of El País. George Mills. George, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to have you with us. What's making the news then in Spain with El País? Kicking off with something that has been a tragic case over the weekend, cycling deaths, and it's brought into focus the whole aspect of cyclists on Spanish roads.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's a pretty tragic story. Basically, a drunk driver killed two cyclists and injured four others while driving between a couple of towns on the, in Valencia near Denia, which is a popular tourist resort. And it was a group of cyclists, you know, a group of Sunday cyclists had gone out for their morning ride. And you know, one of the drivers described this accident, one of the cyclists described the accident, saying that the car was going really fast and it didn't brake at all. It just veered diagonally across the road. And So the upshot was that two people died during a Sunday ride, and I mean obviously it is tragic. It's also not isolated. You know, these deaths do happen on the road way too often, and we've actually had around about 400 cyclist deaths on Spanish roads in the last 10 years or so.
I mean that's quite a shocking statistic, isn't it? Really, when you look at it.
It is. You could break it down and say that it's just under one a week, basically. And then if you look at it a bit more in depth, the overall accident rates have also gone up a long way in that period. So we've had basically a doubling in the number of accidents involving cyclists and cars on country roads and on city roads in that time. And 60% of those didn't involve any cyclist error. So we're basically looking at other causes. But at the same time, I mean, I want to put it in a bit of perspective. So although there's been a doubling in the number of accidents, there's also been a huge increase in the popularity of cycling in Spain. And you may have seen that yourself. So there's just a lot more people riding bikes. And estimates are that, you know, the bicycle sector is selling a million bicycles a year. So that's a lot of people joining the two-wheeled crowd.
Mm.
But, yeah, there's awfully big safety issues, and I think probably anyone who's either ridden or driven on Spanish roads will agree that sometimes it's a pretty fraught situation, and there's all sorts of reasons for that. So one of the reasons that, you know, now a lot of attention's gone on to the issue of cycling safety since this recent accident, and people have pointed out that there's problems with the infrastructure. So the roads maybe just aren't designed for cyclists and cars together. Or the other problem can be that basically cyclists don't know the rules either. So a survey showed that some 30% of cyclists in Spain have never actually looked at the cycling rules. So they don't know what it is that they have to do or not do on the roads. So basically, the problem needs to be addressed, doesn't it? You have to look at improving those, like running more of these sort of safety awareness campaigns. You have to invest more money in infrastructure. And there's another side to this. So basically, last year, the Spanish government depenalized some of the more minor traffic infractions. So some things that had been crimes previously were taken off the books, so to speak, fairly minor traffic offences. But one of the one of the byproducts of that was that a truck driver who'd accidentally run over a cyclist in 2013 never actually ended up in court. And so the widow of this guy who was killed by the truck driver has petitioned pretty strongly to get the rules changed again, because at the moment, you know, I mean, everyone wants to be able to go for a nice bike ride on the weekend, but you also have to have the right conditions to do it, you know, and it's got to be on both sides, doesn't it? I mean, car drivers need to be more aware, that's clear, but also cyclists need to be more aware. And yeah, you've got to put the money in to make sure that these things run safely.
It's a cocktail, isn't it? I mean, to get to the studio, for example, you go down the old A7, as we have on the Mediterranean, which is the old N340. It's basically a British would know. It's basically a dual carriageway with no hard shoulder, and a lot of the traffic, you know, lorry traffic going to Algeciras, and you'll be, you know, quite happily within the speed limit, doing 70 kilometers an hour or 60, and suddenly you come up fast behind a guy on a bike who is doing 15 kilometers an hour. There's not enough room to go. And on a Sunday morning, it's even more deadly, because you have, as you said, these chatters, these guys were doing out on a Sunday ride at whatever, 7 in the morning. Sounds like just the type of the time that people are coming out of the clubs at 7 in the morning. This lady who crashed in has now been detained in custody, I'm getting reports in this morning.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, if you, I live on a very popular cycling road, and to be honest with you, you come up hard behind some of these people who are two or three abreast, and it's just slam on the anchors. The infrastructure's not here.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, and it is frustrating if you, I mean, I've been on buses too, where, you know, public buses stuck behind groups of cyclists as well. And I mean, you can, everyone has to use the road, but it's difficult when you've got competing interests, and, you know, public transport deserves a place as well. And I don't know whether we need more dedicated cycling routes, but yeah, definitely, as you say, in many cases, the infrastructure is just not there.
Yes.
And I mean, I sometimes wonder why people even want to ride in those conditions as well. It's another factor, but so something has to be done.
Something has to be done. Moving away from cyclists, I'm the phones are flashing already, and I won't take your calls right now. I'll wait till we finish with George before I get told what for. We all go to fill up, and petrol stations throughout Spain are quite wonderful places. You can kind of get most things that you need, and especially if you're driving on the autovias, they seem to sell everything from silly hats to local produce. But there's a luxury petrol station to the stars in Madrid. Tell me more.
Well, yeah, one of the things that I find strange about petrol stations in Spain as well is that you can often buy alcohol. So if you happen to be driving along and have a sudden need for a bottle of wine, you can pop in and get one of those as well. So that's not something you see in every country. No, but in Madrid, we have this, it's basically to all extent, you know, to all appearances, a normal petrol station, a BP in the municipality of Pozuelo de Alarcón, but this one's a little bit different. So basically, you pop inside to this petrol station, and instead of having your bags of crisps or your soft drinks, you've got caviar, you know, to the tune of €1,000. You've got Dom Perignon champagne. You've got €300 bottles of wine. You've got 500 different bottles of wine on offer. So basically what's going on here is, call it a bit of a petrol station to the stars. Basically this BP is right next door to La Finca, which is this really prestigious private real estate park, so to speak. And it's where footballers live, for example, Ronaldo and co. And as the owner of this petrol station says, you know, these are people with pretty special purchasing power. This is actually the richest municipality in Spain. So you can pop in there in the middle of the night, and for €50, you can buy up a tin of anchovies with just 10 anchovies in it. So that's an expensive tin of fish. And the petrol station has a turnover of about €8,000 a weekend, which is like well more than double what you'd get at a normal petrol station. But, they've never been robbed, apparently, and the footballers are all good customers and all nice guys, according to the owner. And so if you happen to be Madrid way and you fancy picking up something slightly different from your you know, can of Aquarius or some Pringles, why not pop in there and get some caviar?
I mean, I must say, I'm looking at the picture on your excellent website at the moment, and Victor Fernandez looks like no other petrol station owner I've ever met, and I've been to quite a few. When I was living up in the Campo, I mean, you could get, I think you could get a 6-litre bottle of Cruz Campo, that one, and a lighter, and that was about it. But he's got a wine rack there that would put most restaurants to shame.
I mean, 500 different, you know, brands on his wine list. That is phenomenal. That is really... And you're right. He does look like a petrol station owner to the stars, doesn't he? You can imagine him running a 5-star hotel or something like that.
Absolutely,
he's got a character. I'm definitely going to make a stop there myself at some stage just to experience that, I think.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you're filling up and Cristiano Ronaldo's next door and Guti pops in and Bale, you know, gets, like you said, pops in for one of those anchovies at €5 a fish, I think it's the place to be. Now, moving onwards, there's been a demonstration. Yeah, moving. Certainly makes sense. Again, it certainly makes a change from the Pringles at 2 in the morning. Moving away from the petrol station next to La Finca in Madrid, over to was it in Madrid, this surrogacy fair that took place?
It was. I mean, this is a story that El País has been following for a while. So surrogacy and adoption in Spain, obviously, it's a hugely hot, you know, controversial topic, and we're talking hot button stuff because people want kids. That's the bottom line. And if they can't have them, they will try, you know, resort to desperate measures to have children. And I mean, that's a pretty understandable sort of drive. But the whole surrogacy and adoption issue has been really complicated. And just to give you a tiny bit of background, until, you know, there's been actually quite a large drop in adoptions in Spain over the last 10 years. So it's dropped from, you know, sort of 5,500 kids being adopted in 2004 to just 800 in 2015, which has left a big, it's a big shortfall in the number of, you know, children coming into Spain via adoption. And that's partly because international standards or standards in individual countries have got tougher. And it's just, I mean, it's a very good thing. You can no longer just waltz into a country and buy a baby, so to speak. But what's happened in Spain as adoption has become more difficult is that people have turned towards surrogacy, or this idea of bellies for hire, where you pay someone to have a baby for you. And it's become a huge global trend. So basically, it's pretty hard to get an idea of exact numbers. But basically now, there are more people buying babies via this surrogacy method than there are via adoption. And it's also much quicker. Adoption can take up to 8 years, whereas with surrogacy, you know, it's a shorter process. But it's complicated.
Is surrogacy illegal in Spain as well? I'm reading from your website.
That's right. So that's the basic strange aspect of this story, is that surrogacy itself is illegal in Spain, and it's punishable by up to a 5-year prison sentence. And so what that means is that this surrogacy fair in Madrid was taking place in a context where actually you can't even do it in Spain. So, there was a big protest, well, a noisy protest rather than the big one. So about 100 people turned up to this protest and said, look, started screaming, don't buy a baby. This is exploitation. You shouldn't be considering this option at all. Women in the third world are being exploited by first world mothers who want to have children. And, you know, the fair organisers said, look, you know, we're not here to sell babies. We're here to provide information to people. So even though surrogacy is illegal in Spain, you know, getting information about it obviously in itself isn't. I mean, and the women who were going to the event said, look, you know, for whatever reason, we can't have children, and we wanted to explore this option. But basically, there's a legal limbo. So it may be at the moment illegal in Spain, but Spanish women or Spanish parents or couples can go overseas, or do go overseas, and pay someone in, say, the Ukraine or Greece or the United States to have a baby for them. The problem is that the children, who say, let's say you have a child born with a surrogate mother in California, if you decide to bring that child back to Spain, technically the Spanish government won't recognize their citizenship, because they'll say, hang on, the baby was born to an American mother in the States and then isn't entitled to Spanish citizenship. So you can't, it's not really an acceptable situation where you have people doing it, but then they have their children in that situation.
Right. So
what do we? Yeah, exactly. So go on, yeah.
That's a legal nightmare and a half, isn't it, to untangle with that one? Then, if they say the womb is, you know, it was a surrogate mother, she was an American or Ukrainian or wherever they come from, and therefore, you know, your new baby doesn't, you know, you may be the biological parents in terms of egg and sperm and whatever, but in fact, we're going to classify the child as an American or a Ukrainian.
Exactly. If the Americans or the Ukrainians accept that option, you could have a child in theory who. You didn't get a citizenship because of all sorts of legal issues. But so obviously what that means is it's probably time for some sort of legislation or looking at the legislation again in Spain. At the moment, only one of the big political parties really has an opinion on changes to the law. And that's, you know, Ciudadanos, which is like the fourth biggest party. There's a centre-right party, and they're saying that Spain should have like a UK-style altruistic surrogacy, which means you could say, for example, go to your sister or your cousin and say, look, would you have a baby on our behalf? Money doesn't change hands, or if it does, it's only for paying for the therapy, etc. And that would make the surrogacy proposition possible, but just in a few limited circumstances. And I guess some people arguing on this side of the fence say that you have to have legislation to control the industry, in the same way that with organ donation you have to have rules, because if you don't have any rules governing organ donation, you get a black market, and that's probably what's happening now in Spain. So this surrogacy fair has really, you know, brought that issue back into the spotlight again. So we've had quite a lot of interesting events and news flying around Spain this week.
Absolutely. A mixed bag, as they say. George, we're going to run out of time. It's been interesting to speak to you. As always, if people want to find out and look at these stories in more depth, there is, of course, the excellent El País en English website. Give me the web address, please.
Sure. In fact, I would say probably even the better way to reach us would be just to Google El País en English on Facebook, and then you can find our Facebook feed, or yes, you can visit us at just Google El País en English and you get our sites.
George Mills up at El País in Madrid. Thanks for your time today. Speak to you very, very soon.
Take care. Bye.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Are you scouring the web for the best Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals? Stop it. Get Rakuten. Rakuten is a shopping sidekick that gets you cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. Right now, you can get up to 15% cash back at the stores you love. You can even stack cash back on top of the biggest sales of the year. That's savings on savings. It's more time shopping and less time searching. With Rakuten, you're always saving at your favorite stores on the things you're already buying. Cash back is automatically added to your account as you shop, and you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Now's the time to join. Up to 15% cash back ends on 12/2. Plus, new members will receive a welcome bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.